This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
Hello and welcome to Trumpet Hour on KPCG FM. This is Philip Nice, and thank you for joining us today and every week. We appreciate our longtime listeners, our regular listeners, and our newest listener, whoever you might be, logging onto kpcg.fm, browsing around on thetrumpet.com, or scanning the FM stations as you wait in construction at Kelly Avenue and 15th Street here in Edmond, Oklahoma, the home of Trumpet Hour and KPCG. Some of our listeners know exactly what I'm talking about. A lot of road construction and a lot more ahead. For those longtime listeners that I mentioned, we have a treat for you that I dare say you've been waiting for. The creator of Trumpet Hour returns today. Joel Hilliker, who once upon a time on May 29th, 2015, recorded the very first of more than 700 episodes of Trumpet Hour, returns today for a special segment and preview of the next issue of the Philadelphia Trumpet. Since he handed off Trumpet Hour to Jeremiah Jacques and me, Mr. Hilliker has been devoting increased time to his work in helping Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry produce articles and other written material, including for the July issue of the Trumpet. And you can see that issue in advance, by the way, in digital form if you sign up for the Trumpet Brief at thetrumpet.com. But in that issue, you will find an answer to what so many people have been asking about: what is happening to America and why they can't stop it. Why can't they stop it? After all, for all the talk about it and for all the effort put into it, why can't it be stopped? Mr. Hilliker comes back hitting hard with a look at why America's will is broken. And we also return with a longtime contributor, Jorg Mardian, tackling something that will sound all too familiar to a lot of us, the zero exercise habit. Yes, many of us never exercise. And if you do not exercise, then this segment is for you. And returning to that thought about the excitement and beauty and joy of young people who are living right, we devote a segment to the imminent whirlwind that is the 2023 summer tour of Celtic Throne, the Irish dance production that involves quite a few exciting and joyful and happy and talented young people. What is it? Where is it going? Why? We'll talk with Celtic Throne tour manager David V. Hill. All this on today's Trumpet Hour.
Why is America so weak? Have you noticed how weak America has grown on the international stage and even dealing with problems and threats here at home? A lot of conservatives say the problem is Joe Biden. Well, it's these radical leftists, these communists controlling the government, controlling our big business, our media, our education, and so on. That's the problem. But you know, the truth is that's not the heart of the problem. We have to look at why those people have been able to take over our government and our tech companies, our corporations, our schools. Federal officials are censoring free speech. They're bullying and intimidating people. They're stealing elections. They're boosting illegal immigration. They're encouraging criminality and discarding the rule of law. Why are people allowing this? Why aren't they fighting it and putting a stop to it? A lot of Americans are unhappy about it, but rather than standing up to these affronts, they are passively permitting them. The nation is suffering epidemic weakness. Why is that? This is a crucial question. Why is America so weak? In an article nearly 25 years ago, Trumpet publisher Gerald Flurry wrote this: America is called the world's only superpower. Many nations have looked to the U.S. for protection, but that trust is rapidly fading. Nations like China know that Americans are too fearful to fight. We do all we possibly can to avoid any human casualties. We do this to the point where we have become a nation of cowards. Weakness only encourages strong dictatorial leaders. How can we correct this deadly disease of a broken will? He wrote that 25 years ago, and the trend has grown far more deeply entrenched in the quarter century since he wrote those words. If we're going to correct our broken will, we must know the cause. Well, Leviticus 26 explains that cause. In that chapter, God warns that rebellion against him leads to punishment. Verses 18 and 19 say, "And if you will not yet for all this hearken unto me, then I will punish you seven times more for your sins, and I will break the pride of your power." There it is. America's persistent rebellion has resulted in God's intensifying curses. Our will is broken because God has broken it. In that article, Mr. Fleury warned, "What a curse to have a broken will in a world full of dangerous dictatorial leaders. We simply cannot survive unless the problem is corrected." Will is so often the decisive factor in war. And what is this exactly? Military leaders have asked this question, and they basically boil it down to a force within a man or within an army, a desire, a determination to do whatever it takes, to sacrifice whatever is necessary to triumph. And you must have that kind of will to win in war. And America's will is broken. So as grave threats multiply worldwide, America's military says that its top concerns are, quote, to tackle the climate crisis, to improve diversity, equity, and inclusion across the force, with an emphasis on uncovering possible racial disparity. Those are the priorities of our military leaders today. The Navy has a drag queen as a recruiter. Military bases have joined public libraries and schools in hosting drag shows. Well, after one such show, a military spokesman told Yahoo News, "Ensuring our ranks reflect and are inclusive of the American people is essential to the morale, cohesion, and readiness of the military." America is living Leviticus 26. It's now out in the open. Our moral weakness and rebellion against God is so great that we have military leaders telling the world that promoting sexual deviancy increases our fighting readiness. Well, the truth of it is, promoting sexual deviancy is a root cause for breaking our will to fight any war at all, foreign or domestic. These types of depravity are the exact reason why our nation is crumbling and why God is cursing it. He's removed the mighty man, the man of war, the captain of 50. You can read that prophecy in Isaiah 3. And the people who are leading in the place of those mighty warriors are rendering the mightiest military in the world, in world history, impotent. The latest figures show that the American military spends more than the next 10 nations combined. But we can't stop the Chinese military, which spends only a third as much. We can't stop the Russian military, which spends less than one-tenth what America spends. This is the effect of aiming your $877 billion budget at promoting diversity, equity, and inclusion. This is Leviticus 26 and verse 20 in action. "Your strength shall be spent in vain." This weakness in America is a curse, and it's a curse that comes from disobedience. In his book, America Under Attack, Mr. Fleury points to a prophecy in Daniel 8 showing the spiritual dimension to this issue. That passage shows that the devil and his demons are so successful in their attacks by reason of transgression, it says. Mr. Fleury wrote, "The values that helped make America great are being cast to the ground from the top. And why? It is by reason of transgression, because there is so much sin within the people." Now, this is a crucial truth, because people want to believe that the problem is just a handful of radicals in power or on the fringe. They're the ones that are creating all the trouble. But God says, very differently. This is what Mr. Fleury wrote. This is not merely a problem of one man at the top with a lawless spirit. He would never have achieved the heights of power if not for a massive crisis of lawbreaking throughout the nation. Our people are saturated in sin of every imaginable type and proud of it. This lawless spirit is a curse, and it leads to many other curses, like strength being spent in vain, like a broken will. Now, we can see that in our leaders. The question is, can we see it in ourselves? Can we see it in the people of this nation? What happens when a superpower loses its patriotism and loses its religion and loses its desire to have children all at once? Well, America is about to find out. Now, 25 years ago, the Wall Street Journal and NBC surveyed American adults about values they viewed as very important. Patriotism was, quote, very important to 70% of Americans. This is 25 years ago. Religion, very important to 62%. Having children, very important to 59%. Well, this past March, the Wall Street Journal took this poll again. And today, those same numbers have plunged to 38% of Americans say patriotism is very important. 39% say religion is very important. 30% say having children is very important. And these trends are worst among the youngest adults, the 18 to 29-year-olds. Religion is very important to only 31% of them. Patriotism and parenthood, only 23%. That's remarkable. Now, it's interesting, by contrast, the people for whom money is very important rose over the last 25 years from 30% to 43%. So think about this. If America was, as Mr. Fleury wrote, a nation of cowards 25 years ago, what about today with patriotism right about half of what it was at that time? It looks like fewer than one in four young adults today are patriotic enough to fight for their country. And yet, perhaps even more troubling is that that same percentage, 23%, are even fit to fight. This is from a Pentagon study released in March, which found that 77% of Americans age 17 to 24 do not qualify for military service. All but 23% of prime military age youths are too fat, mentally ill, on drugs, or otherwise unfit for military service. And don't expect this trend to turn around, because you look at the next generation and they are being trained to become emotionally unhinged if someone doesn't call them by their preferred pronouns. America is living in a fantasy that is about to be rudely disrupted by a world that will not tolerate this. A nation cannot harbor that kind of self-hatred, that kind of softness, and survive. Indulging in sin shatters an individual's will. It shatters a nation's will. It breaks your will to fight. It disarms your ability to resist evil. And in a world ruled by the devil, which is what our world is today, that's a catastrophic problem, because evil is everywhere. When we fail to fight evil, it spreads. And in time, it conquers. That's true nationally. It's true individually. It's true in our own lives. But we see the appalling proof all around us. When you indulge in sin, you are separating yourself from God. You're rejecting his protection. You're inviting Satan's influence. You are accommodating evil rather than fighting it. You are in a spirit of surrender. Think about this. How did the world's most powerful military reach the point where a man who dresses like a woman is celebrated as America's, quote, first female four-star admiral? How does that happen? How does it happen that we come to believe that we are affirming our children by pharmacologically castrating them and surgically carving up healthy genitalia? How does that happen? How do we reach that kind of moral abyss? Well, the answer is we got here step by step. Why won't society stand up to the blatant evil of transgenderism? Well, we won't stand up to it because we've already surrendered to the evil of same-sex marriage. And before that, we surrendered to the evil of homosexuality. And before that, we surrendered to the evil of pornography and the evil of divorce and the evil of adultery and the evil of fornication. For decades, America has been surrendering to sin on every front. So how can we expect to suddenly summon the fight to take on the latest evil? The New Testament epistle of Jude reminds us of the fate of ancient cities saturated in immorality. This is what Jude verse 7 says. Even as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities about them in like manner, giving themselves over to fornication and going after strange flesh, are set forth as an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. So supernatural destruction reduced these immoral cities to ash. And yet, they had a certain allure, even to Lot and his wife. Read that story in Genesis 19. Now, Jude 18 shows us that this prophetic epistle is for the last time, and it is an example. It is a warning for us. This is what Mr. Fleury wrote about Jude, verse 7. Homosexuality and lesbianism have become chic today in the nations of Israel. First, our people are giving themselves over or utterly surrendering to an evil spirit of fornication that destroys marriages and families. Then they go after strange flesh. And he's quoting Romans 1 and verse 26. They change the natural use into that which is against nature. So he writes, before the plague of homosexuality, there is the spirit of fornication, which tears marriages and families apart. Now, that booklet was first published in 2005. And at that time, the plague of homosexuality, as he referred to it, that had become mainstream. And the battleground in the culture war was shifting. Same-sex unions went from having virtually no public support in the 1980s to over 50% support in 2011. And by 2015, that number had risen to 60%. And that was the year when same-sex unions were legally recognized in all 50 states, 2015. Today, the number of Americans approving same-sex unions is well over 70%. But think about that. We had surrendered to fornication, to adultery, to homosexuality, and then 2015, we surrendered to same-sex unions, same-sex, quote, marriage. So what happened? Well, the battleground shifted again. Sin advanced, because that's what it does. Unless you destroy it, it always advances. In June 2015, that was when Olympic gold medal decathlete Bruce Jenner publicly declared himself transgender. So suddenly this new issue filled the spotlight. And then public debate intensified when in July 2017, President Donald Trump announced that transgenders would not be allowed to, quote, serve in any capacity in the U.S. military. Within months, courts overruled the commander-in-chief. They forced the military to allow transgender people in. Surrender on that point set off a social transformation tidal wave aimed at accommodating people who are confused about their gender identity, quote unquote. The mainstream media, politicians, totally on board, enthusiastically championing this movement, and they label efforts to slow this tsunami as attacks on human rights. They demonize opponents of child mutilation as enemies of, quote, gender-affirming care. The battle continued. In 2021, West Virginia passed a law barring male students in public schools from joining girls' sports teams. A district court blocked the law's enforcement pending the outcome of a lawsuit over it, and the state sought to reverse that. But guess what? In April of this year, in a 7-2 ruling, the U.S. Supreme Court denied West Virginia's challenge. They made sure that biological men can continue to participate in women's sports. That's the Supreme Court of the land. Now, also in April of this year, Jenner joined the fight against men competing against women. He tweeted this: "Today, I publicly launch Fairness First PAC, Political Action Committee, to fight the radical gender ideology, put parental rights at the forefront of education, and keep boys out of women's sports." So think about this. How dominant is sin right now in the American culture war? Just take this as an indicator. A man who thinks he's a woman is arguing with the Supreme Court about morality, and he is the one with the more conservative position. That's remarkable. All around in America, you see the spirit of surrender. Consider the issue of abortion. The abortion pill mifepristone is used in more than half of all abortions in the U.S. In early April, a U.S. district judge in Texas suspended the legal use of this pill. And this case quickly came up before the Supreme Court. And on April 28th, the court struck down that ban. This case still has to go through the lower courts. And the Supreme Court, which is supposedly 6-3 conservative, you know, what some people have called the most conservative court in 90 years, they want to make sure that as the case moves through the lower courts, people can still use mifepristone to kill babies, no restrictions. There were a lot of media outlets, when they reported on this, they noted that the U.S. Supreme Court justices, they were just doing what most people in America want. A 2022 Gallup poll showed that 85% of Americans support legal abortion in most or all cases. Pew and PRRI polled major religious groups in America, and they found that with the exception of white evangelical and Hispanic Protestants and Latter-day Saints and Jehovah's Witnesses, a majority of people within every religious group favor abortion. And PRRI also found that majorities of residents in all but 7 states support abortion being at least mostly legal. Now, within those 7 states, abortion supporters still number between 42 and 49%. There's no state in America where more than 14% of the people say abortion should be illegal in all cases. Does anybody care what God thinks about this? Study into it in the Bible, and he says abortion is murder. We'll link to an article in the show notes that proves this to you. If you have not looked into it, look into it. God says it's murder. A great majority of Americans don't care what God thinks. When the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade last June, there were people who said, well, this is a sign that conservative Americans are battling back. We're gaining some lost ground in this culture war. Though there are a lot of religious people who think America is in the middle of a religious revival. The reality is overturning Roe kicked the matter back to the states. And most people, a majority in 43 states, want abortion. Look at what has been happening in recent elections. Voters nationwide have been punishing politicians who oppose killing unborn babies. Last November, Montana voted on a legislative referendum requiring healthcare providers to take, quote, all medically appropriate and reasonable actions to preserve the life of an infant that is born alive. So that is talking about even after an attempted abortion, if the baby is born alive, you have to protect that life. And voters in Montana rejected that. They decreed, let those babies die. We're not talking about Massachusetts here. We're talking about Montana. This is how morally sick America has become. That sickness is the cause for our broken national will. That is the cause for America's disappearance on the world scene. That is the cause of our passivity as tyranny swallows our nation. We're in a war. And when you surrender to sin, that creates a toxic environment in which evil can flourish, perversion can flourish. It's like a human body. Disease can't grow in a healthy body. It grows in a weakened body. The healthier you are, the fitter you are, the more you're protected from sickness. That's why the devil's always working to weaken people and sicken people, because he wants to control us. He wants to draw people deeper into spiritual slavery. And when people stand for nothing, they are vulnerable to exactly the kind of moral bullying that radicals are using today. Study history, and you look at the American spirit that animated the Revolutionary War. You study the spirit that animated the war for Texan independence. And look around today, and where do you see that? It's all but extinguished today, that fighting spirit. And whatever flame still flickers today, the government is zealous to smother it. Just look at the way that it has crushed dissent, the way that it has prosecuted the Jan 6 insurrectionists, quote unquote. To actually reverse course in this country and to put down that kind of tyranny, that would require extraordinary patriotism and courage and fight on a magnificent scale. And in today's America, it seems like just about everyone is dropping to their knees and conceding and surrendering to these satanic radical forces. In that article 25 years ago, Mr. Fleury wrote, "We gained our freedom through much bloodshed and courage, and our freedom cannot be sustained by cowards. We can easily deceive ourselves, but our enemies know the truth and will one day soon put us to the test." How true. How true that is. America's ultimate defeat from our enemies is going to come because we first suffered a series of defeats in dealing with our own sins. Only one thing is going to turn this around, and that is a miracle from God. 2 Kings 14:28 says that he has determined to save Israel by the hand of Jeroboam. You can read all about that in America Under Attack. But America's will is broken, and the prospect of God healing that is very remote. This nation seems doomed to die by surrendering to ever more wretched sin. But you can do something about it individually. This war is ultimately for your mind. You have the final say on what wins in your mind, in your family, in your home. Each of us individually can strengthen our own will to wage spiritual warfare against evil. Mr. Fleury wrote this in that article: "The further we get from God, the more cowardly we become. The closer we are to God, the more we manifest courage." When you're spiritually healthy, you don't tolerate evil. And why is that? It's because you're thinking like God, who is a warrior against sin. You see good, you see evil plainly, and then you act accordingly. The devil has seduced society around us into deep ambivalence about evil. And God commands that we react with stout hatred against evil. We love people, but we hate the sin that they are engaging in, that is destroying them. Romans 12 and verse 9 says, "Abhor that which is evil, cleave to that which is good." It doesn't say try to understand that which is evil or negotiate with evil or try to reason with evil. It says abhor evil, utterly detest evil. That's what you have to do. You cannot win in warfare if you are lukewarm about your enemy. A casual soldier won't attack the enemy with enough force. And you'll never win this culture war. You'll never win the war even in your own life until you first recognize clearly your own heart, which Jeremiah 17:9 tells us is desperately wicked. It's terminally sick. Abhor that which is evil in your own life, and you'll be motivated to eradicate it. Cleave to that which is good, and you will be inspired to fight for it and even die for it. We live in modern Sodom and Gomorrah, surrounded by evil. And you can read in 2 Peter 2, it tells us that anciently, righteous Lot was vexed. He was grievously pained and tormented by the Sodomites' filthy conduct. And yet what happened? Over time, you see that evil day after day after day, and it's difficult to maintain the right kind of spiritual vigilance and godly disgust about that kind of evil. The tendency in human nature is very strong to want to just compromise and to accommodate evil. And you look even at Lot here, he receives this great commendation from the Apostle Peter, But read Genesis 19 and you see he lingered. When God tried to get him out of there to save his life, protect him from the destruction that was coming, Lot lingered and it almost cost him his life. His wife, she looked back on Sodom with longing and she was divinely judged for that. To build the spirit of a spiritual warrior takes real effort. It takes vigilance. 2 Timothy 2 verses 3 and 4 give terrific practical instruction on how to do that. It says, endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No man that wars entangles himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who has chosen him to be a soldier. Don't entangle yourself with this sinful world and its ways. If you're casually participating, just going along with its trends and its entertainments and its distractions, you're not thinking like a soldier. If you're going to fight for God and he is going to fight for you, then you must live in a way that pleases him. This sick world desperately needs strong, righteous leadership. God is calling and training such leaders today, and he needs fighters. That's what he's looking for in the leaders of tomorrow's world. That's what he needs in the people who are going to help put down Satan's rule and replace today's leaders who've been conquered by the devil. Are you among those few with the fighting spirit to join God's cause?
I'm here with Celtic Throne tour manager David Vigil. He has been in charge of booking halls and travel arrangements and logistics and marketing for the different Celtic Throne tours during the past couple of summers. David Vigil, tell me a little bit, what is Celtic Throne?
Celtic Throne is an Irish dance and music show. It's just a celebration of Irish dance, its incredible history, stemming all the way from the Middle East, how it got to Ireland, spread through the British Isles, and came across the Atlantic to America.
So that's tying Irish dance back to any of those nations, but let alone the Middle East, is probably a unique thing that a lot of even Irish dance enthusiasts probably aren't aware of. Might be interested to find out how it traces that journey. We're talking about a journey that takes place over the eras.
Yes. Yeah. So it's tied to King David's culture. So if you follow some of the descendants of King David and that culture, it did reach the British Isles. And so that's why you can trace it back to the Middle East with his reign in the Kingdom of Israel.
Right. And you can see a little bit of that on CelticThrone.com. Go to the website and see a little bit of the history that Celtic Throne portrays. You've got kind of a unique perspective in handling a lot of the arrangements, but also like milling about in the crowd in the lobby afterward or whatever, and finding out what people's reactions to Celtic Throne have been. And I'm really interested in that. I've seen a little bit of it on social media and we've talked a little bit about it, but I know that you've gone through and actually gotten sound bites recordings of people who've not seen the show before. I've seen it a few times. You've seen it several times. Mm-hmm. They've never seen it before. They come and then you get that immediate reaction. What are some of the reactions that you've gotten?
So I'd say for the most part, it's just shock at how good it is. I think for a lot of people, because it's not well known, they haven't encountered Celtic Throne before. There are children involved. So maybe the expectations aren't as high, say if they're going to Riverdance or Lord of the Dance or something like that. So when they watch the show and when they come out of the theater, they just are really just surprised about how professional it is, how good everything is. The music is just fantastic. the staging, the lighting effects, costumes, every part of the show is just fabulous. So you can see that. And I think because it's like that upside surprise there too, everyone is just even more jubilant for seeing it. And then the show also just ends on a wonderful high note too, just very inspiring and uplifting. So they're coming off that as well. And so the reaction has just always been great and fantastic. And I did forget to mention about the music. So the music is composed by Brian Byrne, who is a just fantastic composer. He has composed music for a big production called Heartbeat of Home. It's also has Irish dance as well as other dances as well. And he's also done some movie soundtracks. I think he's a Golden Globe nominated. So you have that going on with some world-class dancing. Our lead dancer is a champion dancer. So the show has it all. It's just amazing.
You mentioned Brian Byrne as the composer. Is anyone relevant teaching them how to do these Irish dance steps?
So the dancers come from Armstrong School of Dance, but it's part of the John Kerry Academy. John Kerry's probably next to Michael Flatley, probably the most known Irish dancer. His school has been featured in a film. He regularly produces some of the highest performers in Irish dance, and he himself danced in Riverdance and was a lead in Lord of the Dance. So, yeah, the instruction is just first rate. Everything about the show is just first rate.
They had, I guess, the first show of the tour, I believe, was April 30th, if I'm remembering right. You and I were both there, and John Kerry was actually there, and actually came up on the stage and took a bow for all the effort that he's been putting in through online classes and so forth for years now, as I understand it, teaching these kids how to do dance. And you mentioned the youthfulness, the young ages of the cast. Or the troupe, I should say. And some of them are very, very young, and they've got limited roles at that young age. But even the main dancers are quite young. And I think something that really leaves an impression on people, it seems to have left an impression on the shows that I've been to here at Armstrong Auditorium in Edmond, is young people who are happy and sincere. And you see that come out on the stage, I think. You see that in these smiles that have become bigger and bigger with each performance, really. I mean, these kids are happy.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's about 30 performers, so it's quite a few. I think the sincerity of the troupe just comes out in their faces. There's just remarkable unity, positive encouragement and reinforcement in the troupe. Everyone gets along. And the crowd can pick up on that. It's not like an act at all. You don't have to work at it. So you see that just come out in the stage. And people have remarked on that. You see that with the musicians as well. Just everyone working together, working hard, and no like jealousies or anything like that going on. So it is exactly what you see on the stage there.
And that's a wonderful thing. I have been backstage, you know, as they're whatever they're doing, milling about back there. And you see the same kind of happy attitudes, respectful attitudes. You don't see kids on their phones. You don't see kids like being mean to each other or being arrogant toward each other. You see just a good, wholesome way of life, I guess, among those young people.
There's a piece in the show where it talks about how many families are involved in the production. And I think that's also shocking to the audience just to know and see. But it also just communicates the fact that we're really one big family. And so when they hear about it and they see how many people are related and how many people have parents working backstage, and then they see that come out through the performance, through the smiles and the expressions and the unity and all that, it really does hit home for them just what a special, unique group of performers this is and what a great show this is as well from that perspective.
Mm-hmm. And the content of the show, we talked about how it goes through the eras, but it really, Brian Byrne's music there really brings out the essence of those countries that you mentioned, the Middle East, up to Ireland. So you get like a highly concentrated taste of Ireland, and then you get a highly concentrated taste of Scotland and England. I think a lot of people are refreshed by an acknowledgement of, hey, how great is Ireland, how great is Scotland, how great is America. People seem just really moved, emotionally moved to see someone, I don't know, give thanks for America. Give thanks for the heritage that's come through America back to England, Scotland, Ireland, and ultimately the Middle East.
Yeah, it definitely comes out. There's a part in the show that definitely celebrates America, especially. It has some patriotic songs. But even when we do highlight the other areas that show does, the show highlights it. When it hits those areas, it tends to hit some kind of well-known, very familiar type music. So it is very much a celebration. It's patriotic. And there's definitely a crowd and audience out there that seeks that kind of entertainment. A lot of entertainment we get today is just about degrading America. And so it's just unique and special because it doesn't do that. And the audience will respond, normally does. A lot of times they'll stand up at a certain patriotic song. And yeah, it's just one of those things that I think people crave today.
Yeah, I agree. And it's a patriotism that has a little bit of depth to it. I know some of the young people who are dancing in there, and some of them are patriotic offstage as well, and in their own different ways. But it's not just a reactionary patriotism. Like, there's a depth of understanding there that they understand that this country and the other countries are special. And there's a reason for it. It's not obviously that the American people are great, but it's a, I would say it's a thankfulness, a gratitude for the nation. Not the type of, I don't know, selfish patriotism that you can sometimes see. And so, but that is refreshing. And to see an elderly man, as we did, slowly struggle to his feet to stand at a patriotic, one of those patriotic medleys that was in the show is very, very moving. I've seen that more than once. I'm sure you have too. Mm-hmm. So you've been, as we said, you've been involved in the logistics. Give us an idea of what's ahead for this particular tour. Where are you going, and where can people find out about where you're going and how to see Celtic Throne?
Yes, so we're going to 13 different cities on the tour, the 14th city being Edmond, Oklahoma. And we're hitting multiple states: Ohio, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Rhode Island, Virginia, North Carolina, and even Washington, D.C. So, and then Tennessee and Kentucky. There's a lot of states we're hitting up there. So we're going all over the Northeast and Eastern Seaboard. We will have all the information there at CelticThrone.com. Our final theater went up for sale, so we've got the full set up there now, and you can buy tickets to any place if you're nearby or if you're traveling to. So I would just recommend anyone who is interested in watching the show or just even seeing if there is a place nearby to visit CelticThrone.com. It's not going to disappoint you at all.
A busy summer ahead for David V. Hill, Celtic Throne tour manager. We appreciate you coming in, David, telling us a little bit of the behind-the-scenes perspective on Celtic Throne. All the best to you and all the dancers on the tour. And again, hopefully we'll see some of our listeners.
Thank you, Phil.
On Trumpet Hour, we focus often on health, healthy families, healthy society, healthy nations, healthy minds, healthy bodies. Health, fullness, completeness is a beautiful thing. Families knowing what it means to be fully a family, a nation knowing the purpose of that nation, a body being fully what a body was created to be. Health, completeness, being what you were created to be starts with knowing. And you, dear listener, you know. You know that your body was created to burn food that is natural. You know that your body was created to move. You know that your body's capacity to move increases if that capacity is used and decreases if that capacity is unused. In other words, yeah, I know I should be exercising. And you can see that it is good. It is beautiful to be healthy, to be whole, standing in a proper posture, sitting erect, lifting what needs to be lifted, carrying your son, carrying your daughter, handling things around your yard or handling things around your elderly neighbor's yard, maybe getting under the car or the house for repairs, playing sports, helping set up an activity. That's a beautiful life, a beautiful thing to have a body that can serve. And we know the benefits of bodily health. We agree with those benefits. But the hard part is doing. And the hardest part of doing is getting started. Do you hear me all too well right now? Spend a few minutes with me and our long-standing guest contributor to see if today is the day you go beyond knowing and start doing. So how can you get started with this habit of exercise? Here to help us answer that question is certified trainer and registered nutritionist Jorg Mardian. Mr. Mardian, breaking the old habit, which for many of us is zero exercise. It is hard.
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the hardest things in life for people, exercising, because we're not exercising anymore. It's something strange to us in a society of inactivity. So to get motivated and to keep exercising is the key. You know, it's a simple sentence, but it's hard to do, right? So there's no argument about the basis of it being hard. So if you're having trouble beginning an exercise program or a plan to follow it through, you know, you're not alone. I mean, there are practical concerns like we can have a busy schedule, poor health. You know, things are challenging in life around us for most of us. But the biggest barriers that I find with my clients are mental barriers. You know, it's all locked up in our head. Maybe it's a lack of self-confidence, motivation, discouragement. It can be any of those things. You know, we can put those things out in front and say, that's it. But I mean, we've all been there at some point with something in life. But, you know, my solution to that is whatever your age or fitness level, even if you've never exercised a day in your life, there are steps you can do or to take to make exercise less intimidating and painful and more fun and instinctive. You know, and that's the key, because you want to do something that you can do for decades. So we want to keep going at this, but how do we do it? That's the question.
That's right. And I think it is so important. And maybe maybe we're meeting the minds of our listeners as we admit, yes, it is hard. It is. We understand it is a hard thing. You are not, if you have zero exercise, and literally, I mean, we are speaking to you if you have never exercised in your life. If you're in that category, or you've been on again, off again, I know I have been on again, off again in trying to build an exercise habit. So again, we do understand, I understand again from experience, that this is a difficult thing. We are challenging you in this segment. We are challenging you to do a difficult thing. We are not saying, this is not just something where you're like, oh, I know I should, and it's easy, and I feel bad because I can't even do this simple thing. This is a hard thing. I understand, and our guest contributor understands this is a hard thing, and this segment is devoted to helping you get started on this hard thing with just a few simple and small steps. So let's say we know the health benefits. We want to get started. We're trying to open up ourselves to be like, hey, maybe I could be somebody who builds an exercise habit that I can continue for a week, a year, a decade. I'm willing to try to replace, you know, a lunchtime habit or maybe an after work habit with a fitness habit. What's the one thing to focus on in my mind to finally push me past the, I know I really should, but to push me past that barrier and get started?
Yeah. So I've been in the business about 20 years now as a trainer, nutritionist, and I've seen a lot. You know, I've come across people who struggle. Everything is a struggle, as you've stated. So there's the people that hate exercise. There's the people that are confused about it. What type is best? They're shy about it. You know, they don't want to get in front of other people. They have doubts about outcomes. Time constraints is a huge one, right? However, exercise to me is a non-bargaining event. We need it, period. You know, so this space between our ears has a lot to do with getting started. You know, the mind tends to hold us back. That's my job, to get people past that mental barrier, even with your excuses. So developing a tough mental attitude and a resilient mindset is the key component to achieving success in fitness journey. You know, you have to develop that, you know. And so what do you focus on? The mindset. It's okay to say you need that mindset, but you also have to couple it with something intelligent to get you on your way, to build a habit. Everything in life is a habit, you know, but people don't know how to build habits. And so to focus your mind and to get past excuses, I can offer you a technique, the listeners, that brings success in overcoming procrastination, doubts, insecurities, you know, laziness, or whatever else there is in your life. So that technique is called habit stacking. I love it. I've read about it. It's wonderfully easy. And I'm just excited to share it today because you need to develop the habit of exercise or you won't stick to it. So, but instead of using sheer willpower, you know, we'll use this technique where you simply stack your new habit, your exercise, on top of an existing habit. We all have existing habits, whether good or bad, lots of them, you know. So for example, you might have a strong habit of brushing your teeth before bed. You know, that's a good habit. Coffee in the morning, great habit. If you like your coffee, you know, you start a day with a coffee, that's fine. And so those are what we call ingrained habits that you can use to your advantage to improve the uptake of new health behaviors. Okay, so far we know that that's an easy part. Okay, I understand I've got these habits, they're rock solid. And there was a book that I read with from James Clear, and he's kind of a guru on this. It's called Atomic Habits. And he explains all of that. So it's a very simple formula. You know, it involves, one of them involves micro workouts. So let's say we don't want to get into full scale workouts. We just want to get micro workouts for busy people. The formula is if you make your coffee in the morning, you know, how do we get exercise in? Micro workouts? I'm going to do a light jog in place. My coffee typically takes me 4 or 5 minutes. Okay, the oatmeal's cooking. Do a few sets of countertop push-ups. You know, before the shower gets warm in the morning, do a set of high knees. You know, elbows to knees. Boom, 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 boom. Before I eat my lunch, just rip off 25 bodyweight push-ups. I mean, you get it. There's your habit. You're going to eat lunch. You're going to eat lunch. You get hungry. Now, can you add something on top of it? You know, by stacking enough of these habits, these micro workouts, you're going to incorporate a surprising amount of physical activity into your day. It might seem trivial. You might say, well, I'm only going to get 3 or 4 or 5 of these in a day. Fantastic. You know, that's better than missing all of these workouts you're not doing while going to the gym, isn't it? Because you've got the best intentions. So, but if you want to, say, establish a comprehensive workout, you really want to get into this, like say a gym routine or home routine, you use that existing habit as a trigger. Again, you know, after you come home from work, you jump into your workout gear, head to the gym, you know, establish that, link it together. After supper, perhaps that's another one, you can do a 15-minute treadmill run and couple it with a 30-minute home strength workout at home. So that's a way to couple things together. And, you know, it's kind of a piggyback effect. You know, in time, those consistent behavior allow one to act as a trigger for the other. And it does work effectively.
I love that habit stacking one habit on top of, as you say, an existing habit that could be a strong, good habit. It could be something not so strong. It could just be, you know, very simple, as you say, brushing your teeth or having a cup of coffee and stacking it on to that, adding it onto that, piggybacking it onto that. There's a car company with a slogan, the best or nothing. And I joke with my wife sometimes. I say, you know, that's kind of my philosophy with a lot of things, but it's a real bad philosophy sometimes, because if you will only say, well, I've got to do the best, I've got to do, you know, go to the gym and be there for an hour or longer and do all this ambitious stuff, a lot of times you get nothing. you don't do anything at all. So starting small, building a habit on top of another habit is a wonderful way. And as you were saying that like kind of like you said, you were excited to share it, that my mind was kind of lighting up with possibilities that weren't there before. So okay, let's do it. We're going to do it. Help our listeners right now to get started on that new habit. What do we need to do right now?
we all start on the bottom rung of the ladder. That's important to understand. You know, nobody starts at the top, so we don't have to feel bad about that. We all start at one at the beginning line, and then we run the race. So let's outline five ways, five scenarios that we can start in exercising. You know, so we'll begin with what we call the desk jockey. You know, he doesn't exercise much, but he's very willing and he's able. He might think so, but he's willing. So if you're strapped for time and you want a low impact, low injury strengthening workout, say cardio workout, try circuit training. I'm a big proponent of circuit training. I use it now. I've totally changed the way I train, you know, as I get older now. So I'll tell you how this works. Instead of going heavy all the time, which leads to a lot of injuries over time, that's a fact. It's established. It's scientific. When you're young, you have the capabilities. But still, I caution people, do it safely as you go through the decades. So you pick a series of gentle on-the-joint exercises, like push-ups, squats, lunges. Planks are very gentle. Might be hard, right? Glute bridges, on the ground step-ups, Russian twists, leg lifts, stuff like that. And, you know, before anybody gets too confused about the terminology here, this is all on the internet. There's so many videos on YouTube on this. It's crazy. And we do, you know, we'll provide some examples of these as well. So what you would do is you do each move for a certain number of repetitions. So for instance, 20 repetitions. Then immediately you move on to the next move in the series. Perhaps three exercises. You do 20 reps for each of the three exercises and you do them all without resting. Okay. That's a circuit. Now you can repeat that sequence 3 to 4 times. You can repeat it 10 times if you like. That's a circuit. And you can use a whole body circuit like that. You're going to be breathing fairly hard. The beauty of this is you can do it according to your fitness level. You can modify each exercise. If you're breathing too hard, slow it down, right? So, and you can do this for any time that you like. You can do it for 5 minutes or 45 minutes, 50 minutes. It doesn't matter. Your level. Since you aren't pausing for breaks in between, if you're trying to push it, your heart rate is going to climb up there. So you get that cardio effect and that stays elevated. And then, so circuit training is an excellent strength and cardio challenge for the desk jockey.
We can provide some resources for you to be able to understand and see how these movements are done. But these are not movements that require you to buy the equipment you see advertised on the commercials. These are not things that require a lot of investment monetarily or otherwise on your part. These are pretty simple movements, right?
Well, that's the key. You know, if you have the equipment, fine, use it. But if you don't let it be a barrier to you. You know, you need to get started. So some people, for a second example, may be confined. They may want to do home exercises, you know, so what we call apartment exercises. I do Zoom meetings with clients all over the world in their homes or apartments. It's quite effective, you know. I mean, at the end of the workout, they're not, I would say, happy with me because I've worked them hard. So they don't have a lot of equipment, but you know, if you have a set of dumbbells, resistance bands, or an optional exercise mat, that's it. It's very cheap. But if you don't, grab something else. You know, I favor dumbbells, but resistance bands are cheaper and they take up less space. So dig out a simple internet routine. And again, we'll provide an example of this. And then the third one would be like, say, you're on the road in a hotel room. That's another type, right? Or a truck driver. I've had those. And that's challenging because I don't get out of my truck all day. What do we do? Well, body weight exercise there is best. You know, truck drivers, they can step out, take a 10-minute break by the side of the road and just get a killer workout. And I'm telling you, you're going to be alert. You don't have to have this big mug with a handle on it to keep you awake full of coffee. And it's the same in a hotel room. I've used that many times. I just grab a band or something very light. I use a bed in the hotel room for resistance, squats, lunges, push-ups. And I'm sweating. You know, it's very, very effective. So another type would be people who are sick. I can't work out. My doctor said I can't. Yes, you can. And you should. You know, doctors don't have a lot of education on that. But we see the real world results of exercise. And exercise, if you're sick, you should tone it down, but you should exercise. You know, but do, you know, depending on the exercise, make sure you have clearance from your doctor. Sometimes there's some, you know, factors that we don't have as trainers. If you're okayed, I would say, then start with a combination of short cardio and some strength training. All right. So anything that we've talked about in a hotel room and as such, that's okay. Start very small. Squats, have half the body down. Don't go all the way down. Walking lunges, don't break into a full lunge. Just walk it across the room. Break that knee just a little bit, right? Do something more than you've been doing. That's the key to this. Wall push-up, very easy to do. Not hard on the heart. You know, just get your chin up to the wall, put your feet away a little bit, stuff like that. You can do it inside your home if you're shy. You can go outside and do it on your in your back lawn. The key is to make sure that you understand the value of what you're doing. It's priceless. Exercise, the benefits of exercise are priceless. People have no understanding the gold that they can have for free for their body.
I think it would be a rare doctor to say, you cannot move at all, right? Like, you obviously don't, as you said, if you're cleared to do it, then you can do short cardio and some functional strength training. But whatever it is, surely, you know, you can go for a walk. Surely you can do something more. Like you said, I love that. First of all, move. And second of all, a little more than what you're doing now. Maybe that increment is very small, but you can do a little more than you are doing now. You've got a fifth example for us as well.
Probably the hardest category is those who are very, very unfit. And there's a factor of, you know, I'm scared to do anything because I'm going to hurt myself. If you're willing, we're good to go. So let's say you start with 5 minutes. 5 minutes a day. Have you got 5 minutes? Surely everybody has that. You know, let's take a 5 minute walk down the road. You know, if you can do that, or a 5 minute walk on a treadmill, you know, but make sure you do it every day. So the key is consistency. Nothing in life happens without consistency. You will fail each and every single time. But if you commit yourself to taking stairs at work, a couple of stairs, I've seen people who can't climb two stairs. And in a matter of weeks, they're climbing the entire staircase. You know, it's remarkable. Make that happen each and every day. There's going to be days when you can do more and days when you feel like you can do less. It doesn't matter. Do your 5 minutes, and then each week you add on a little bit of time to that. You know, the key is just to do it. Just do it with the long-term aim of doing more, like, say, building up to 10,000 steps a day as a foundation. You know, build your foundation of exercise. Don't be scared. I've seen people do stuff that they never dreamt possible. So you have to fight off your zero exercise habit. Many people have a zero exercise habit, and it's going to, well, I'll say this, it leads to an early death. It surely does. You have to reframe your mindset and find an exercise routine that you enjoy, that you can do, and that you have an accomplishment with. You know, set small, achievable goals for yourself, have a little patience, a little persistence, and guess what? You're going to meet your goals.
If you are willing, we are good to go. I love that. Our listeners, you're at zero. Maybe you're at zero. Maybe not. But even if you are at zero, take the stairs, do the apartment exercise. Look at the show notes for some of the suggestions, some of the demonstrations on how to do some of these movements, these simple movements. A push up against a counter. If that doesn't work for you, a push up against a wall. Start there. Just do it. Get out there. There is something out there that you can do. And you can enjoy. And I challenge you, and personal trainer Jorg Mardian challenges you, to break that zero exercise habit. Stack those habits. And again, if you are willing, we are good to go. Thanks for being with us, Jorg Mardian. And thanks for helping motivate our listeners, all of us, to break that zero exercise habit.
Great to be here.
Well, listeners, that is your Trumpet Hour for May 16th, 2023. We thank you for joining us, whether you're there in traffic, or in the office, or at home, or wherever you may be. We truly do value, we truly do appreciate this time that we share with you. We thank Jesse Hester for his skillful production behind the scenes. And we again thank Joel Hilliker for returning and bringing us a strong message in that preview of the July Philadelphia Trumpet. Subscribe to The Trumpet, as we mentioned, as well as The Trumpet Brief. contact us at letters@thetrumpet.com to subscribe if that's what's easiest for you, letters@thetrumpet.com, and let us know your thoughts. We'll talk with you again on Friday. We'll bring you the week in review, but for now, we thank you once again for joining us today on Trumpet Hour.